from GnomeCon 4, Savannah, Georgia. You're listening to Rage Quit Radio, Almost Live.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is Rage Quit Radio, Almost Live here at GnomeCon 4 in Savannah, Georgia. I'm Chris Brown, here with two of my other co-hosts. Of Michael Brown, no relation. We've gotten through that already. And
thank God.
The winner of the prelims of the GnomeCon Open, Mr. Dennis Lee.
4-0, Dennis Lee, should be noted. Walked in injured. This is an injured man that went 4-0, represented Rage Quit Radio when Nathan Starwalt slacked out.
Yep.
When Richard Morrow slacked out.
Yep.
Leave it to Dennis Lee to step up and deliver for Rage Quit Radio. 4-0 in prelims. You still got two games left.
It's still prelims, yeah.
You won the prelim round, but it's the top four that move on to the finals of the GnomeCon Open tomorrow. Today was 35 three lists. Tomorrow's 50 points two lists. Jared Fisher, who also judged most of the prelims today, is also here with us. Who are the top four?
The top four that are going to play tomorrow were Dennis Lindsay from Savannah.
Right.
John Martinez from Charleston. And then Daniel
Marthaler, also from Savannah.
Yeah, so.
So the Savannah team representing.
Yes, very much. Daniel was...
we have the other...
memory serves, Daniel was final table last year with Corey, I think.
No, that was that Joe guy from...
Daniel...
He actually moved away, but he was at a rally.
Okay. Daniel got the GnomeCon nod last year.
Daniel got third.
Okay.
And he got fourth at Scarab.
Yes, he did.
Yeah.
Yes, he did.
So it ends up being like a Minoth, a Troll, a Circle, and a Convergence.
Yeah.
So pretty interesting.
Very, very. So tell us a little bit about how it went. I say injured, which I only say half jokingly, because I know you had a splitting headache when you walked in.
No, I'm sick.
It looked bad.
I think I have a sinus infection.
Oh, fantastic. That's
okay, so
awesome.
So I'm spitting on all of my co-hosts here, making sure that they all get sick too.
Nice. So tell us a little bit about your day. How'd it go? You don't have to go into great excruciating detail, but...
So I played four matches. The first one I played against Chris Niederhauser, I think. Is that his last name?
Yeah. Yes.
Okay. Great match with him. And then the second match I played with Max Bean. The third match was against Cameron. I don't remember Cameron's last name.
We'll get it. Cameron is a local
seaman,
to Charleston.
Okay. Yeah.
He's in the United States Navy. We do care about anyone that puts on a uniform and does their duty. So,
and then,
but yes, he's a seaman, so he's low on that totem pole.
Just like Jared.
If I'm double your rank, it doesn't matter. That's the rule.
And then I played Lindsay the last round. So the first round, when I played Chris was playing minions. He loves Rask, so I said, okay, well, he's going to play Rask. And I think the best matchup for Rask is Jarl, because Rask can shut you down with the Alpha Strike, and I can counterfeit to shut his Alpha Strike down, too. So I think that was a good choice there. So we ran out just kind of the middle of the board. We faced off. I was forced to feat first because he was too close, so I had to feat first. But then... on his turn, he didn't counterfeit, and he realized this in the middle of his turn after he had activated Rask, and it kind of sucked for him. So then I moved in the next turn to hit him with the Alpha Strike with basically all Weapon Masters. I had Sons of Brag and I had Champions, and just completely clean house.
Wow.
But I think...
It was a squeaker, though. It came out. You had like a minute 10 on your clock.
The problem was that he had so much jam that it took me forever to kill all his stuff. So it was a real tough match, and he hung in there. Like, I got the first strike. I got the first strike, but he kept on, you know, grinding away, and there wasn't much I could do to get to his caster. So that was a really good match. But one thing that he had told me at the end of the game was that he had forgotten that you can't score on the objective. you can only score the flags in the zone. So he's positioned himself in the middle for the objective, but then he had to move after a couple turns to do that, so that kind of hamstringed him with his control points. So I won that on control points, and I also killed his caster, so that was 5 control points in the caster.
Oh, wow.
So that was a pretty good match for me, I think. I think I played that pretty well.
Okay.
And I think Daniel, or yeah, I think he played it really well as well. Chris played it really well as well, and so it was a great game.
Awesome. Yeah, Max in the second round. Max is running. He was running Circle, wasn't he?
He was running Circle. He had I remember him
as a Kadoran player mostly.
Yeah.
Like that, so.
I don't know how long he borrowed stuff.
I think he borrowed the Circle. Yeah.
Because
I could tell because
he really wasn't 100% comfortable with everything he had on the board. Because a lot of his clock got eaten up. Just trying to figure out exactly what his stuff did. So, but he still did a fairly decent job playing with Circle, given what he had and his knowledge of it.
And I think that a couple of things hamstring. He didn't know the army very well, I think, because he hadn't played with it too long.
Yeah.
So I played against a Balder. I think it was P-Balder. He had the little Wold guy and the big Wold guy. I don't remember what they're called.
Nate will correct us next time we're on the show together.
And then they had the huge Wold guy, the Wold
Wrath.
I think, yeah, he had the Wold Wrath. He deployed his Wold Wrath all the way to his right. And then he deployed Balder all the way to the left. And then the two little Wolds were in front of Balder. So he couldn't force Wold Wrath. Unless he ran to the center. So he couldn't cast any spells, so he ran to the center to force Wold Wrath to run up. The problem was, Wold Wrath didn't have enough speed to get up far enough afield. So he didn't get into the zone. Oh, and I played E-Madrag against that list, because I needed to kill Wold Wrath.
Yeah.
The game also came down to a lot of misunderstanding about the third dimension of the game. Like, it ended up being a very linear game, but like a couple well-placed tramples on the Circle player's part would have led to a completely different change in the scenario pacing.
Right.
And so this 20-point gargantuan led 5 burrowers and nothing behind them stopped him from entering the zone. When it could have just been like forceful one, trample, and then we're good.
Exactly.
I still think Daniel picks it up, but it was a little like, hopefully a learning lesson for that guy is a little way to tighten up the overall presence of the match, not just the linear outcomes.
Right. So again, you know, it was E-Madrag, so I, you know, he does a lot of damage.
Sure.
So we took down the Wold Wrath, we took down the two little Wolds, killed, you know, what's his face, Balder, got the 5 scenario points as well from that. So.
And then you played, in your round 3 was Cameron.
Yeah, Cameron. So that match was pretty tough. He had hits on, I played P-Madrag, and he was E-Veil. He had hits on P-Madrag, so that was tough, but I was still okay with that because P-Madrag was armor 18. He was hitting me with a rake, and P-Madrag still had all his health, and what do you call it? His scroll was still intact.
Okay.
So it was in the beginning of the game. It was all positioning. For the first 2 turns, we didn't hit anything because P-Madrag's slow, and Vale didn't want to commit and get killed by Mole. So
of course not.
We kind of positioned a little bit for the first 2 turns. I struck first with a champion, and then all hell broke loose. I had 2 assassination attempts on Vale, and he had 2 assassination attempts on Madrag.
That's usually about 2 more assassination attempts that happens in the
action. Yeah.
But
so Madrag, the rake was already on Madrag. So Madrag was down like half health or so. The rake was hitting him again. So Vale had purified away Surefoot, so Madrag was easier to hit now. So the rake was hitting him. He did everything he could to destroy the stone, but the stone was so stubborn he kept on toughing. So Madrag still had his armor up. His last ditch effort was with the rake. So he hits Madrag, or he hits the stone with his initial attacks, and the stone toughs twice. Or no, it toughs once, and then he hits Madrag with the rake, And here's the key. Madrak had, what's his name with it? Mulg with it. So the rake hits Madrak and does one damage. Enough to trigger protective fit. So Mulg comes over and smushes the rake, and that's the end of the assassination attempt. And now Mulg was close enough to charge what's-her-face, to charge Vale, so that was the end of that.
And Lindsay was your last round game. The Protector had been off.
Right.
If you're going to die, die on the mic, kid. It's good for business.
Well, I didn't really watch much of the last game, but her being locked out of potentially the Harbinger at the very least after the first two rounds.
She ran Harbinger in rounds one and two and locked herself out of that list.
That was unfortunate.
She even said it the way that, I mean, I'm a firm believer of this as well, that like round three only matters if you get to round three.
Yeah.
And so like if you really feel it's your best drop in the first two rounds, you gotta run that gamble. Probably of all her lists, she had to play the one that fell into trolls the worst.
Yeah. So she had her list was double Bastions, Resnik, a Reckoner, and the Fires of Salvation, and then the Choir.
Blood of Martyrs.
So
like Choir, Vassal, Seneschal.
Yep. So I needed to kill the Bastions. I knew I could with Blood Fury and.
Who have you got? Because you're not locked at this point, are you?
Yeah, I'm not locked. I use Madrak 2 again.
Okay.
Madrak 2 with warders, full warders, full fen blades. Min unit of pigs. So, pretty good. So, I knew I needed the pigs to kill the... What was that again? The jack?
Blood of Martyrs.
I needed the little guys to kill the Blood of Martyrs. And then I could hold off the Bastions with the warders and the fan plates. So basically this game, I had really lucky rolls. Super high damage rolls. And that's basically what made the game for me, was super high damage rolls. She played, you know, really well, but I mean when your dice are hot, your dice are hot.
That's part of the game.
Yeah. I think on average, Dennis still wins that matchup. Like, if you literally took dice out of the equation and you just said, like, this is the average and then rolled all of them, because threat ranges were very far in Dennis's favor.
Yeah.
Okay. Bastion's threat 9, Fenblades without mini feet threat 11, with mini feet threat 13.
Right.
And Blood Fury makes them weapon masters. And she's also a big fan of spreading out Bastion damage, which, like, there's two ways to do it. There's the way that a lot of people do it, where you're trying to maximize the Bastion Seneschal heal to make sure you always heal that 10 points each round. Or there's, like, the Dan McCollum way to do it, which, of course, like, I'm a big fan of my seat all the time, about, like, if you have two models, let's say Model A and Model B are on the Bastion's unit, Model A gets charged, you only put one damage on him, the rest on Model B, and then when Model B takes the charge attack, you want that extra 40 points of damage just go into his corpse.
You can
really play with the numbers there if you see it from the math perspective, but it wasn't being used like that. And I think that hurt a little bit.
It did.
Very interesting. So tomorrow, 50 points, two lists, specialists for the GnomeCon Open. If you notice the name conspicuously absent, there's no Corey Hockman here.
Corey Hockman.
So the streak is over.
Officially.
Somebody new.
Yep, so there will be a new GnomeCon Open champion. I understand there is to be theory crafting over hookah.
There is to be.
So.
Right now, it's between three casters. I painted Berica, so...
You painted a panda.
I painted a panda.
That's what you did. You painted a panda.
Borka's riding a panda, so I really want to play him, and I don't really care about winning or losing.
What was he called? That's the racist bear? It's the racist bear.
That's the... He's not racist. It's a panda.
He's both black.
Black and white.
He's black and white.
So.
Ebony and ivory.
Okay.
So I really want to play Berica, but I don't know if he's going to be competitive at 50 points here.
Right.
The other choices are P. Madrak. I think he's going to have game. And P. Gristle is a lot of fun to jam with, so I'm thinking about that.
Now, the strange thing is you do have the strange advantage of knowing to an extent the selection of casters you could face, because you know the three factions you're playing against, and you know what they've already played. So you know kind of what fits in a bag.
Yeah,
and then some people are really, really committed. Like I'm calling it now. Like, John Martinez is playing the Comet Primax and then Iron Mother.
Yeah.
Like,
no, he's... I think
you'll see the Axis.
He's playing Axis.
The Axis team force.
He's doing Axis and Lucan, I think.
No, he's going to play Mom, dude. He's going to play Mom.
If I were a gambling man, you would probably see Harvey and Resnick.
Yeah, that's fair.
Because I think those are two of Lindsay's favorite casters.
And you're definitely seeing Goat Vana.
Yeah,
she's
Goat
just Vana.
Probably
fucking
Cromack,
awesome.
Right? Because he plays Cromack a lot, doesn't he?
I would say Cromack and Goat Vana.
Cromack's solid, so.
Both of those guys are going to hell.
I think the worst matchup for Dennis is if he has to play Lindsay or John, and then the other one wins the other match.
That's the best case scenario or the worst case scenario?
Worst. I think the best case scenario is he gets to play against Circle, because I feel Trolls have a better option, especially the Trolls that Dennis runs, because it's really hard to alpha through Trolls.
Yeah.
And Circle doesn't like to get caught up.
No.
Also, Magic 2 is nigh unkillable, so like he doesn't really care about getting stoned on, like teleported on. But if he wants to play Berica and she brings a book, that's the end of that. Like, we're just done there. Like, that's not an issue.
Well, best of luck tomorrow, Dennis.
Thank you.
The GnomeCon Open may or may not come to Rage Quit Radio, which would be interesting. That would be fun. After 3 years, well, 2 years, of Richard Morrow trying desperately.
And failing.
And failing.
And failing.
It might be Dennis Lee that brings it home.
Oh, you just jinxed it. I'm going to lose 2-0 tomorrow.
We hope not. Dennis, go rest up. Y'all have fun.
Yep. What?
You're
the
host.
I keep forgetting that.
Because we're both hosting this, which is odd. It's throwing things off.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, I'm Chris Brown. That was Mike Brown with Dennis Lee and Jared Fisher, I guess.
You guess. You think his name is Jared Fisher?
I don't know. Sometimes I get confused.
I don't know. He's a tall, bald guy. That's all
I am. Not.
And so, until next time, you'll be hearing from us a little bit later on. Ladies and gentlemen, this is Rage Quit Radio, almost live here in Savannah, Georgia, featuring GnomeCon 4. And to be honest, I'm going to make this wrap up relatively quick. It's been what a hectic day. Did the GnomeCon open. Watched the spell draft a little bit. Commentated with Dennis and Kana on Iron Painter. And I tell you, this has been one heck of a weekend. I'm glad Jared Fisher decided he wanted to take a tour of the town a little bit, because it seemed very good that we were able to see more of the sides of Savannah other than just a coastal Georgia center. This weekend has been one of those, how should I put it? I wouldn't say hectic, but definitely eventful. Though I do believe we've had less competitors here this time around than we did last year. I'm not too sure if that's because people either had, things to do, things pop up, or decided not to come. But there's nothing wrong with any of that. It's just that, your guy's missing out. I mean, obviously, if you had an emergency or anything like that, take care of your business. But, it could have been, this still could have been something if not otherwise. I'm not sure how painting competitions have gone besides Iron Painter. Congratulations to Lindsay Wagner for winning Iron Painter, as well as congratulations to Kaylee Cape for fan choice. And such a great day to know.
I'm now being joined by a fellow co-host and Brian Cape. I'm sure he has a few words before we close this up.
Did I unbalance it by having my daughter in it and having a bunch of friends cheering for her? I didn't pay anybody to do it.
Well, no.
Did you catch Desi on the way out?
No. I'm sure that...
Tiari left. Huh?
I'm sure that she had, you know, enjoyed herself. She looked very tired. I'm actually surprised she was able to stay up long enough to do the painting competition. But in any case, Brian, I don't think you had any real, you know.
I literally just threw it. I was like, I didn't.
Any real contribution to her winning fan favorite? I think. Her being a young competitor doing something that fun was what got her that win. So, other than that, hey, you know, it's her victory to have. Well, ladies and gentlemen, until tomorrow, Sunday, when we get to see the top four of the NomeCon Open, we'll see what happens. Good luck to everyone that's part of it. John Martinez, Lindsay Wagner, Dennis Lee, and... oh, my Lord. I actually forget the last competitor's name. I'm terrible at this. Well, until tomorrow, guys, we'll see you next time.
You've been listening to Rage Quit Radio. Like us on Facebook at facebook.com/RQRpodcast. You can visit us online at ragequitradio.blogspot.com. Listen to us on Podomatic, ragequitradio.podomatic.com, or find us on Stitcher Smart Radio. You can email us at ragequitradiopodcast@gmail.com.